From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Last year, a strained U.S. Border Patrol managed to catch 1.1 million illegal immigrants attempting to cross into the United States from Mexico. Half of those were picked up on the Arizona border. Many more get through. Today, volunteers from around the country have gathered along Arizona's southern border to set up their own patrols. They call themselves Minutemen. Their pup tents and binoculars look part serious and part publicity stunt. The Bush administration, they say, needs to clamp down on illegal immigrants. And if it won't, they will. James Gilchrist spoke recently about why he launched the Minuteman Project.
Now, I guess I struck the mother lode of patriotism. And I knew there were a lot of persons who were reluctant to come forward and say that I want secure borders, because those in the past who have done that have been accused of being racist, bigots, all these ugly words that came out of the political correctness of the last 40 years. And we're rebelling against the political correctness.
And here, an Arizona farmer tells a Minuteman what he sees on his property.
Where I'm at right here, at any given point that I sit out, I can run into probably 10 or 20 illegals.
What do you do?
I stop them. I stop them, I call Border Patrol, and basically sit and wait. And they end up waiting for so long.
And they willingly stop?
Some. Some will stop. Some you have to, I don't get physical, I don't manhandle them. Usually scare them because they don't know that I'm sitting there when they come running up on me. And I usually have a dog with me. Dog's barking at him. You tell them to sit, they sit.
Not everyone supports the Minutemen's call to action. Critics call it vigilantism, anti-immigrant, anti-Mexican. Meanwhile, a roaring national debate on illegal immigration goes unresolved. Tonight on Point, a showdown on the Arizona border, a standoff over American immigration policy. You can join the conversation. Have you been following the posses fanning out across southern Arizona? How do you see the tide of undocumented workers? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We begin with the latest on the so-called Minutemen gathering along Arizona's border with Mexico. Ted Robbins is NPR's Southwest correspondent and joins me now. Ted, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure, Tom.
Ted, I understand you've been very recently right down along the border. Describe the setting and what you saw gathering there.
Up until midnight last night. It began on Friday, of course. This is a month-long project for April. And it began on Friday in Tombstone, Arizona, with what I think most people would agree with was a media circus. Large numbers of satellite trucks for television and lots of reporters running around. And a few hundred volunteers registering at an old historic courthouse in about a block away from the OK Corral. So you can sort of get the Old West drama there. And then things spread out south to the stretch of desert in between Naco and Douglas, Arizona. The folks were setting up, Minutemen that is, setting up a communication center at a place called the Miracle Valley Bible College, and being somewhat secretive about it, and then others openly rallying at the Border Patrol stations, and then finally over the weekend and beginning today in earnest, these sort of outposts spread out in stretches right along the border, folks with lawn chairs and pickup trucks in 8-hour shifts around the clock, just simply keeping an eye on potential illegal crossers, and when coming across them, calling the Border Patrol through a network of ham radios, basically, because cell phones don't work real well down there.
Now, Ted, this stretch between Naco and Douglas, it's right down in the southeast corner. I've seen it called the San Pedro River Valley. Why this stretch?
Because this time of year, you're right. It's right on the southeast corner of the state. And this stretch is extremely popular with crossers. It is the San Pedro River Valley is a riparian corridor, so water obviously is at a premium in the desert. So this allows some relief from the heat as well, with the shade that the trees line the river with.
Mm-hmm.
Though quite honestly, Tom, this time of year is when the tide tends to shift a little bit to the west, to the West Desert, when we hear of all the we hear of deaths in the desert in the heat of the summertime.
Shifting because of dangerous runoff?
No. It's counterintuitive, and the Border Patrol has been unable to give me a reason because they can't come up with any, and I can't get any myself. It seems counterintuitive that during the winter they would cross where it was. You would think they would cross in the desert where it's cooler, whereas in the summer they would shift to this area we're talking about. But in fact, except for one year in the last 5 years, April has not been a particularly busy month in the stretch that's being patrolled right now.
Though when I look at the reporting on this, Ted, I see reports of hundreds of thousands of would-be illegal immigrants in past years being caught in just this stretch.
Yes.
So it gets very busy.
Well, it's extremely busy from right after New Year's to right about Easter, and then it starts to slacken off and shift to the west. But there's no question that this is, and we're talking about a 300-mile stretch along the Arizona border, most of which is in the what the Border Patrol calls the Tucson sector. So there's absolutely no question that this is the busiest corridor as a whole in the country for illegal crossing.
Ted, we hear about the ham radios and the tents and the gear and the kit out there along the border. What about guns? We've read that as well. What portion of these so-called Minutemen are armed?
Well, nobody denies being armed. It's hard to say that everybody has a sidearm. No, they were requested not to bring any rifles or shotguns, but that sidearms were welcome. In Arizona, you need no permit to carry a weapon, a sidearm, pistol in plain view. You do need a weapon to carry a permit, rather, to carry a concealed weapon. So I would say that let's just say many of the folks that I saw had sidearms, but not all of them.
Ted, stand by for a moment if you would. I want to turn to Tombstone, Arizona, where Bill Bennett joins us. He's a spokesperson for the Minuteman Project. Bill Bennett, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
You're quite welcome.
So how many folks do you figure you have along the border there at this point, Bill?
Excuse me. The report that we had this morning was that there was about 400 people that are there for the observation posts.
And these were essentially organized over the Internet from around the country.
That's correct. Excuse me again. That's correct. However, once the media started talking about the Minuteman Project on Friday, we had a lot of walk-in volunteers who hadn't even heard about it yet.
What's the purpose? Ted described the scene there over the weekend as a media circus. Is this primarily to draw attention to issues of immigration, or is it literally to help the Border Patrol?
The whole project was designed as a support of Border Patrol in terms of Border Patrol is doing a fantastic job with the people that they have available and the funding they have, but they are overwhelmed. So it's basically a support for them, and it's also a protest against our federal government for taking Homeland Security too lightly.
And what are the Minutemen supposed to do? These folks camped out in the desert, if they see people coming across the border who they think may be undocumented workers, illegal immigrants, what are they going to do?
It's simply observe and report, just like a neighborhood watch association. If you lived on a street where you had a neighborhood watch, you'd watch your neighbor's property. If you saw something suspicious, you'd call the police.
Well, why the pistols?
Our neighborhood watch happens to be the nation's border.
Why the pistols? And are these vigilantes?
Okay. First of all, you have to understand that in this area of Arizona, there is things in the desert that put you at the bottom of the food chain. This is not for two-legged protection. There are mountain lions, there is a jaguar, there are rattlesnakes, there are bears. So it's just not a supremely hospitable area.
You know, that's not what some of your volunteers have been quoted telling the media. Not that they are, they almost uniformly say that they're not out to shoot anyone, but if they get in a tight scrape, they want to be able to defend themselves.
Well, and that could be what their attitude is, but, you know, in terms of protection, if I am out there in that area, I'm not worried about the people coming across. The people coming across, basically, you know, they're going to see that there's somebody there. They're going to get reported. they're actually quite calm.
Bill Bennett, I'm reading here the U.S. Border Patrol saying thanks but no thanks. They don't want Minutemen out there. They say it just complicates their lives and their job. How do you respond to that?
Well, you know, it's one of those situations where Border Patrol is totally overwhelmed, so I don't know how this is going to complicate things because, number one, it's people just sitting in individual static locations. They're not out wandering around. And it's just extra sets of eyes watching our nation's borders.
What's your evidence that the Border Patrol is overwhelmed, Bill?
Well, by their admission, they only catch 25% of who gets across. So if they got in, if 119,000 were caught last year, do the math.
And 500,000 along the Arizona border and a million against the overall border, I guess.
Yes.
So that's a big number. How long will the Minutemen stay out in the weather on the border?
Observation posts are scheduled to be manned 24/7 for the month of April.
And what do you want overall? What's the big goal? Presumably, you don't want volunteers on American borders forever with pistols and pup tents.
No, the big goal is basically to show the federal government that, yes, the borders can be protected. They can be ostensibly closed down. And this is a homeland security issue. This has absolutely nothing to do with Mexican or Mexico. This is about homeland security.
Though I have to say, your boss there, Mr. Gilchrist, sounded kind of sensitive on that front. We'll look at it. Bill Bennett, we're so grateful to you for being with us tonight. Thank you for joining us.
Okay.
Bill Bennett, spokesperson for the Minuteman Project, joining us from Tombstone, Arizona. Ted Robbins with NPR in Tucson. Please stick with us. Listeners, you can join the conversation tonight. Have you been following the posses fanning out across southern Arizona? What does this look like to you? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about a showdown at the border and across the country, really, over illegal immigrants as volunteers, some call them vigilantes, fan out on the Arizona border to stop the flow from Mexico. You can join the conversation tonight. How do you see the tide of undocumented workers? Is this a threat to the American way of life and U.S. security? Or are these determined, sympathetic human beings who float the U.S. economy? Do you want to slam the borders closed or open them to guest workers from Mexico? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We'll be joined in just a minute by Mayor Ray Borain. He's mayor of one of the little towns right down there on the border who's watching this firsthand. We're joined right now by Ted Robbins, Southwest correspondent for National Public Radio. Ted, you heard the spokesman for the Minuteman Project, Bill Bennett, there, saying that the Border Patrol is overwhelmed and whether they want this help or not, these are concerned citizens who feel they've got to step up and do something. Is that the way the Border Patrol describes it?
Well, you know, the Border Patrol, interestingly enough, and I do have to say, Tom, that I never saw anybody brandish a weapon, by the way. But nonetheless, there's certainly effect to having one by your side. But the Border Patrol, interestingly enough, less than a week ago, 2 days before this project started, announced that it was sending 500 more agents here. It's got 2,000 agents in this sector already. 500 more agents and more than 20 extra aircraft. So they claim it had nothing to do with the Minuteman Project. And the Mexican government has sent increased numbers of forces to the border in this area to steer people away from there. So the timing was a little suspect, despite the fact that Customs and Border Enforcement said it had nothing to do with it.
You mean it looks like that anticipating this influx in the media attention, they were bulking up in advance of the so-called Minutemen?
Right. In fact, it could have simply been they say that they had planned to institute phase two of the Arizona Border Control Initiative, which they began a year ago, this March anyway. But the timing 2 days before the Minuteman Project began, it either trumped the Minuteman or they felt like they had to do something, and they did. And there is clearly an increase, an influx in resources down there right now.
And Ted, we're hearing about something like 500,000 immigrants caught at the border and maybe a lot more getting through. How do Arizonans respond to this? Are they up in arms or do they want them working, you know, in the landscape crews and I don't know, factories and farms on into California? What's the response?
I'll answer that in just a second. I didn't really answer your question before. The Border Patrol does say that it invites citizen participation. It wants citizens to keep their eyes open, and they do say that. They just simply say at this point they don't want to be used as a political pawn by the Minutemen, and that they don't, and that in fact they may be getting in the way by tripping sensors, that kind of thing. So that answers your other point. You know, people right on the border, this is like a balloon. The Border Patrol has shut off the San Diego area and El Paso to some extent. And
so it then, bulges out elsewhere.
Exactly. And so the folks right on the border, the ranchers and the towns, by the way, you're going to talk with Mayor Bahrain, his city, they used to run through backyards, and they don't anymore because of the Border Patrol presence there. And so you're left to, frankly, a relatively, in the large scheme of things, few number of people out there, you know, ranchers mostly, who are getting hammered. Their fences are being run over by vehicles, smuggling vehicles. They're just getting hammered.
And hammered because the flow is so heavy.
No, hammered because if you're a rancher and you're trying to keep your cows in a particular area, and in the middle of the night to avoid a checkpoint, a van full of entrants gets just decides to avoid a checkpoint by blowing through your ranch and runs right through your fence. I mean, and that's a major expense. It's a major time, you know, waster, and this happens repeatedly. Plus, groups of folks are found on their land. So there's no question that the folks actually in this area who live out on the land, mostly ranchers, are getting hammered. The folks in the towns, on the other hand, in Douglas, in Bisbee, they seem to see things a bit differently. There's a large Hispanic population there, and I think Mayor Bahrain will answer this, but they don't, by and large, the ones I've spoken with do not support this effort the way many ranchers do.
Who are right on the border. Ted, let us turn right down to the border now, to Douglas, Arizona. We're joined from Douglas by the mayor of Douglas, Arizona, Ray Bahrain. Mayor Bahrain, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
So there you are, right on the border, 92% Hispanic population, and now you've got this vigilante group or citizens patrol or media circus, call it what you will. What do you make of it, Mayor Bahrain? Is it helpful? Is it not?
Well, let me tell you that at the front end of the show, I was very humored by the statement made by Mr. Gilchrist about hitting the motherlode of patriotism.
Patriotism.
You know, as far as I'm concerned, he hit the motherlode of interlopers and revelers and people that are thinking that they're at a tailgate party down here on the border. You know, we don't appreciate them down here. We don't want them. We don't need them. This community is 92% Hispanic, as was mentioned earlier. And it's an affront to the Hispanic community here, and it's an insult that that these people would come from wherever they are waving their Confederate flags and thinking they're going to help us down here on the border.
Is that how it looks? Have you been out where the Minutemen are? What's your image of what you see there?
Well, that's what I've seen. I was out there again all morning, and I see people that are out there enjoying themselves, thinking that they're on a picnic. And as far as Mr. Bennett's comments regarding the guns, I've never been so amused in my life. That goes right to the heart of the problem. They don't know the terrain, the area. They don't know who they're dealing with or what they're dealing with. Yet bears in the low desert, mountain lions. Oh. When there's hundreds of people out there disrupting the operation of the Border Patrol and disrupting everything else, you're not going to see those kind of animals out there. They brought those guns to show force and to show their superiority.
What about the problem that this group and others point to? They say there is a tide of illegal immigrants coming across. Only a fraction is being apprehended, and it's a state problem and a national problem. How do you respond to that, Mayor Bahrain?
Well, there's no doubt that they're coming over here by the hundreds, and I respond that...
Or hundreds of thousands.
And I respond this way. I tell you that they're being drawn over here by entrepreneurs and people that are hiring them, and it's a labor problem, which is being fueled by all of the entrepreneurs and the manufacturers and the agriculturists and everybody that hires them. And if these people really, really want to do something about it and they want to draw attention to it, they should draw attention at the workplace where these people are working and where they know that they're being hired, and in some way, somehow, embarrass these employers who are winking at the law and hiring them as babysitters, gardeners, car washes, construction.
Right on down the line. What about sealing the border? Is it a good idea, a bad idea? Could it be done, Mayor?
No, the border is never going to be sealed. I've lived here all my life, and I've seen this illegal immigration all my life, and I can tell you it's been some time. And they could stand shoulder to shoulder, and they could put the United States Marines on the border here, and they will find a way to get across, believe me. The only thing these people have done here, their presence, has shifted them to another part of the other side of our town now. Instead of going out, they're crossing on the east part of town. And so it's not ever going to be sealed off until the United States government realizes that the Border Patrol, which does a fantastic job, is not the answer. Enforcement isn't the answer.
What is the answer?
The answer is some type of a political, diplomatic situation that's got to have some depth to it. And it can't be a guest worker program, and all these other programs just can't be a very shallow buzzword that people use it for political benefit and to try to draw the vote of the Hispanics and all of those other good things that they do during the elections.
But some kind of acknowledged economic integration, further integration, I hear you suggesting.
Well, you know, again, you know, although a lot of people want to hear it, we're looking at a global situation here. You know, we need their labor. They're taking the jobs of people that contrary to popular belief, that haven't wanted these jobs for years and years. Why? The numbers reflect that.
So you're saying let's find a way to make this work.
There's got to be some sincerity on the part of the American government in sitting down and looking at this thing in a realistic, holistic way. And until that's done, we're going to have all of these circuses here and these carnivals and people coming out here and enjoying themselves and actually causing the city of Douglas an economical problem because they've created a fair environment here that whether they know it or not, where the shoppers and the consumers from across the border that drive our economy in this community aren't going to be coming across this border.
Mayor Ray Borain of Douglas, Arizona, on the Mexico border. Mayor Borain, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
You're welcome.
Ted Robbins, stick with us. I want to bring in a couple more guests here. First, from Riverside, California, Armando Navarro. He is head of the National Alliance for Human Rights, which held counter-demonstrations and rallies in Arizona this week to protest the actions of the Minuteman Project. He's chair and professor of ethnic studies at the University of California, Riverside, writes extensively about Mexican immigrants in the U.S. Armando Navarro, thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you for the opportunity.
And joining us from Washington, Mark Krikorian. He's executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies, which has called for tougher measures to control illegal immigration. He's a regular contributor to the National Review magazine. Mark Krikorian, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Mr. Krikorian, first to you. Your organization has raised quite an alarm about the state of immigration and illegal immigration. What do you think of what the Minutemen are up to and the problem they're attempting to bring attention to?
Well, we didn't raise the alarm. Illegal immigration has raised the alarm. The fact is that it's certainly possible that there would be problems resulting from this Citizens Watch program, but there's no indication of anything like that so far. In fact, the first illegal alien they encountered over the weekend was somebody they rescued who stumbled on their camp dehydrated and lost, and, you know, they gave him a glass of iced tea and they called the Border Patrol. So the idea that this is some rogue vigilante, you know, white supremacist group or something is laughable. I mean, it really is ridiculous. And Mayor Borain's complaints that, you know, these are outside agitators, essentially,
mm-hmm.
sort of the, you know, the southern segregationist complaint about northern civil rights workers, they're Americans and they can go anywhere they want. They're obeying the law, and as long as they do that, they have every right to do what they have to do. And the fact that they are doing this, that hundreds of people have traveled thousands of miles to do this, is an indication of how deep the disaffection is on the part of the public from the elite's immigration policies. Because the split over immigration is not a right-left thing. The research on this has been quite clear that immigration is the number one issue with the biggest gap between elite and public feeling.
How does your organization define the problem as you see it?
Well, there's two parts to it. The first part is what the immigration policy that we do have isn't being enforced. In other words, whatever our immigration policy is needs to be enforced. Otherwise, it's utterly meaningless. The second part is, should we have the current levels of immigration, legal or illegal, in the first place? But that's a secondary question. I mean, the first question that has to be answered is, are we willing to enforce the immigration laws? And if we're not, then Congress and the President can you know, make up all of the, you know, beautiful policy structures that they want, and it doesn't mean a darn thing.
And why does it matter? I we can imagine, but why does it matter to you, to your group, if those laws are enforced? What's at stake?
Well, immigration is the single most important force on our society, exacerbating a lot of the social problems that we are encountering. For instance, the overwhelming majority of the increase in the uninsured population is driven by immigration. All of the increase in the school-age population is driven by immigration. Almost all the increase in the poverty population, the increase in the gap between rich and poor, are caused by immigration. The fact is that mass immigration is just incompatible with the goals and the characteristics of a modern society. And we don't live in 1910 anymore. We live in a very different environment. In fact, one that is different in kind from anything we've experienced in the past. Not the immigration, but us. And so our society has changed in such a way that immigration is a problem.
Mark McCorin, stand by. You've put a lot on the table there, and I want to get Armando Navarro to respond. Mr. Navarro, in California, how do you see what's going on in this southeast corner of Arizona tonight, and how do you see the bigger problem that Mark McCorin describes as having so many deleterious effects on society?
Well, essentially, the issue of immigration, as indicated by the previous speakers, I think all of us would agree that it's a very complex issue.
Mm.
From our perspective, we see the Minuteman Project as a reaction to our growing demographic presence in the Southwest and throughout the United States.
When you say our growing presence, what do you mean
exactly? I'm talking specifically about the increasing demographic increases that have taken place. We recognize today that there are 45 million Latinos in this country. And in the next 15, 20 years, it is being projected that from California to Texas, in most of these states, you're going to see populations from 40 to 55% or so. So that means that in the next 15, 20 years, what today is a growing population will become the new majority population, and whites in these particular states will become the new minority. Already here in California, the white population, according to the 2000 census, is approximately about 47%. People of color are the majority. The same situation now prevails in Texas. New Mexico has approximately a Latino population of 43%, Arizona 26%. In all these areas, you're looking at a very dramatic demographic transformation that has socioeconomic as well as political implications.
And Mr. Navarro, if that increases what's coming down the pike, and if much of it is from illegal immigration,
That's not true.
How would you line it out then?
What's driving the demographic transformation is essentially four major variables. One is that essentially what you have is immigration, both undocumented and legal immigration. That's one aspect, one variable. Secondly, high fertility rates. I mean, in very general language, for every one white child that is produced, there are almost two Latinos. I mean, Latinos have the highest fertility rates in the country.
Okay,
right?
Immigration, fertility rates.
Fertility rates. Thirdly, you have what we call in some circles here in California, white and black exodus. So essentially the concentration of Latinos is becoming intensified by the fact that you have some whites leaving different communities, different counties.
Yeah. And the last cause?
The same thing for the black population.
Mm-hmm.
Fourthly, which is very simple to understand, is that we have a situation where, as Pat Buchanan and Samuel Huntington have addressed in their writings, the white population is not multiplying in sufficient numbers. So this is a phenomenon that's not just endemic to the United States, but Western Europe as well and so forth. So what drives this situation primarily from the perspective of what has been said earlier is the realities that Mexico faces and the realities that this country faces. As long as this country has an insatiable hunger for exploitable cheap labor, and as long as Mexico has an incredible chronic problem of poverty, increasing misery, 50% of its population live in chronic poverty, and that's not talking about the Central American economies and so forth. So you have a combination of push and pull factors that are at play here that really indicate, I think, the seriousness of the problem that lies within the economic systems of both governments.
Armando Navarro, stand by. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. So the lesson that we should take away from that is patrol the borders or not. That seems to be what's on the firing line here, Mr. Navarro. Should the borders be patrolled?
I think that from our perspective, you know, the National Alliance of Human Rights is not an organization. We are essentially a network of individuals and organizations that are very committed to social justice and human rights. We take the perspective that every country has a right to protect its borders. But essentially, when we get to the Minuteman Project, which I think is the focus of this discussion, essentially, from our perspective, they do personify in many circles what some of us have called domestic terrorists, because essentially, they are vigilantes. They are armed vigilantes. And there's a saying in Spanish, dime con quien andas y te digo quien eres. Translated in English, it means, tell me who you're with and I'll tell you who you are.
Armando Navarro, Mark Krikorian, and Ted Robbins, please stand by. We have to take a short break here. We're talking tonight about a showdown at the border and across the country over immigration. You can join the conversation. If the borders really were sealed, who would pick the lettuce you had for lunch? What should be done with America's borders? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about a showdown at the border and across the country over illegal immigrants as volunteers, some call them vigilantes, fan out on the Arizona border to stop the flow from Mexico. You can join the conversation tonight. Do you want to slam the borders closed or open them to guest workers from Mexico? Is it moral to ask Mexicans to risk death to pick the vegetables we eat? Is there a reasonable, fair solution here or something drastic required? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I've been joined tonight from Riverside, California by Armando Navarro. He's head of the National Alliance for Human Rights and a professor at the University of California, Riverside. From Washington by Mark Krikorian, executive director of the Center for Immigration Studies. It's called for tougher measures to control illegal immigration. NPR's Ted Robbins is with us, Southwest correspondent for National Public Radio. And right now from San Dimas, California, is Barbara Alvarez. She is president of the California Landscape Contractors Association. Barbara Alvarez, thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you very much.
What's your response to the scenes we're seeing from the Arizona border, from this notion of citizen volunteers helping to shut down the borders? I'm guessing that your business may be one of those that depends on a flow of people from Mexico.
You're absolutely correct. I am a commercial landscape maintenance service provider. I maintain large shopping centers and homeowners associations and so on. My business is dependent on the documented worker that comes across the border. They are hardworking.
And you're saying documented. What about undocumented?
Well, most of the workers that come to apply for a job here have to go through a process of an interview and provide to me the correct documentation that enables me to hire them, because I am responsible to the U.S. government. I pay payroll taxes. I have workers' compensation, and those entities require me to hire workers that are documented.
So if the border was really sealed so that no undocumented workers whatsoever came across, hard as that might be, but imagine it, would that be difficult for your industry?
Absolutely. It would be devastating.
Why, if they're documented workers?
Well, I'm sure at one time they were probably undocumented. What we need to realize in this country is that it's not about what you or I want. It's the reality of what the workforce has become. And those that are providing their labor for us are not doing it in taking away from any American that wishes to have a job. I advertise in newspapers locally for workers. And I have to be honest with you. I have never received or have anybody come into my office that has been two or three generations here as an American that want to do the type of work that I do. I'm not a Latina. I happen to have my surname happens to be
Alvarez.
Latino. Mm-hmm. But and I come from a family of pretty upper scale. But I have to say that I think the problem with the borders and the mentality of what goes across the United States is that there's such a tremendous difference in those that we provide the service to, and they do not have a hands-on ability to deal with our workers and understand them. I see them as an incredible, they are the lifeblood of my company. And as I say, I provide all the necessary workers' compensation.
Right, all the formalities there. But if the border really were closed, you say disaster for your industry. Barbara Alvarez, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Barbara Alvarez, president of the California Landscape Contractors Association. Mark Krikorian in Washington, you're listening on there. Here's a landscape contractor saying it would be devastating for her business if the borders are really sealed. Armando Navarro saying this is really about pushback against a rising political majority. Your response?
Well, none of it's really surprising. I mean, first of all, the racialist dialogue here from Mr. Navarro is really kind of stunning in its honesty, is that really this is a race-driven, sort of a racial supremacist issue on the part of Hispanics. It's kind of breathtaking, frankly, although that's not what any of the illegal immigrants themselves really are thinking. As far as the business thing goes, though, you know, businessmen always want more people trying to get jobs because that means they don't have to raise wages, they don't have to improve benefits, they don't have to change working conditions. The fact is, 40 years ago, there were hearings about ending the guest worker program we had back then with Mexico, the Bracero program, and the tomato farmers in California said that their industry would cease to exist. It would cease to exist, a simple fact, if the guest worker program were ended. Congress ended it anyway, and guess what? The farmers stopped trying to lobby Congress and started doing their business.
But isn't that because illegals kept coming in spite of the absence of...
For a number of years, illegals did not pick up the slack, and what happened was the farmers said, okay, we lost. So now the money we'd been putting into lobbying, we'll put into investing into machinery and new technology and what have you, and what happened was that as the harvest of tomatoes for processing, for juice and sauce, which makes up the overwhelming majority of all fruits and vegetables, was mechanized, the production quadrupled, and the real post-inflation price of those products fell because the supply of foreign workers had caused that industry not to modernize.
So you're saying it doesn't need to depend on this flow across the border. Ted Robbins, what is President Bush proposing here? Early in his term, before 9/11, he had very ambitious proposals for changing the way illegal immigrants are treated, or immigrants, I should say. Where does that stand, and what would he like now?
You know, the specifics haven't come from the White House. The specifics have come from various, usually Republican factions in Congress. He had called for and continues to call for a guest worker program that matches willing employers with willing workers, and not much elaboration on what that might mean. And then he's sort of been forced to back off to make sure that it doesn't include a road to citizenship and that sort of thing. But I sort of see this. I'm not in Washington, but looking at the competing bills that are coming out of Congress, they seem to be more a fight within the Republican Party, frankly, for which direction this is going to take.
Between the kind of Pat Buchanan brigades and the big business folks who want the labor in the country.
Yeah, Tom Tancredo is the House leader in that, and then as opposed to the president's agenda, or John McCain, who stands closer to the president on this issue.
We've got a lot of callers who have patience.
More liberal, using the word liberal in an interesting
context. Open-handed sense there.
Yes.
I want to turn to our callers. Lana's calling from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Hi, Lana, you're on the air.
I came to this country as a legal immigrant, and I am a U.S. citizen now, and I find it unbelievable that the country such as the United States is unable to secure its borders. It just tells me that the administration is not interested in doing so. I happen to come from the country which had the biggest border in the world, and without all the technology and all the modern equipment, it was pretty secure.
You're talking the Soviet Union, I'm guessing.
Absolutely, yes. And to tell me now that it's impossible to secure those borders, there is no way, no how, it's a joke.
But should it be done? You're hearing tonight about this economic integration that's across the border.
Wait a second. I had to go through a lot of processes to be here legally. Why do the people from south of the border have to... As soon as they cross the border, they are here legally. They're violating the law.
Yeah, and you jumped through all the hoops. They're not, and you don't like it. Armando Navarro, why not make it legalize all this instead of have the having this large and dangerous illegal flow?
Let me, if I can just respond a little bit to what has been said.
Yes.
Essentially, I think that one of the concerns that you cut me off when I was trying to make the end point And that is that within the Minuteman Project, you have people like Chris Simcox, Glenn Spencer, Jack Foote, Roger Barnett. And when the gentleman previously mentioned that we're making it into a racial factor, no, it isn't. It's economic driven, but there is a strong veneer of racism that's impelling this whole issue right now. So essentially, if you're looking at a resolution, it's very simple. It's the inherent contradictions of the capitalist system demand that there is a source of cheap, exploitable labor. This country's economy is totally dependent. I mean, time and time again, references have been made in the last few minutes about how important the immigrant population is to the economy. Well, here in California, there is a dependency. Without the immigrant community, it is the immigrant community that's keeping the viability of our U.S. economy afloat in reality. And unless there is a major restructuring of that system, and unless Mexico has a major restructuring of its own economic system, so where Mexico can be successful in providing the jobs that it needs, Mexico has to be able to provide at least 1 million jobs per year, which it's not doing.
And so those numbers come across the border. Sarah's calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Sarah, you're on the air.
Hi, I called a long time ago, back at the beginning of the hour, because I was very bothered by your use in the introduction of the term illegals to describe people who are coming across the border illegally.
Is it not illegal?
I think that the action is illegal, but the people are not illegal, and I think there's a very important distinction to be made. And one of the things that worries me so much about this whole Minuteman episode is that there's a real dehumanizing effect of the rhetoric that's being used about people who are coming over without documentation. And I work with Mexican families every day, and I know that they feel like they had no other choice for their families to survive, and they're risking their lives to come across the border, and they're not thrill seekers, and they're not, you know, just coming here because they think they're going to get rich, but they're coming because they really feel like they don't have another choice.
So, Sarah, would you maintain the status quo and let that flow come illegally? And no, not calling them illegals, I hear you. Or would you change it? Would you just open the border?
Well, I guess, you know, I agree with what Mr. Navarro and also with the mayor of Douglas said, that there needs to be a much broader solution. I don't necessarily think the status quo is the answer, but I do think that we need to recognize the economic realities that are causing people to come here and that are causing our economy to need people to come here, and have a policy that really recognizes that and allows people to come here safely and legally.
We've certainly heard those tonight. Sarah, thank you for your call. Mark Krikorian, what's your solution here? What are you prescribing?
Yeah, I mean, what I would suggest is that, you know, people who are going to make claims about economics ought to learn something about economics first.
No,
in fact, the idea that immigrant labor is necessary for a vast 300 million person continental economy like ours is gibberish. It's economic gibberish. There's no question that the immigrants who have come have been incorporated into the economy. Obviously, once they're here, businesses are taking advantage of them. But the idea that future enforcement of the immigration law so that there would be gradually fewer foreign workers over a period of time, the idea that that's somehow impossible for a modern dynamic economy to adjust to is just wrong.
And do you think that's where we're headed, or are we headed toward more open borders, more integration with the Mexican economy?
If the federal government doesn't change its policy, we are in fact moving toward more integration. That's not necessarily a good thing either for us or for Mexico, because what it's doing is siphoning off the energetic people with get up and go in Mexico who are coming here where they're a mismatch to our societies, our economies.
And with that, we're running out of time. Mark Krikorian at the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington, Executive Director. We're grateful to you for being with us tonight. Thank you so much. And Armando Navarro at the University of California, Riverside, head of the National Alliance for Human Rights. Thank you very much for being with us tonight. Ted Robbins, what do you make of this conversation? It goes round and round. There's never a solution. Are we reaching an action point here?
Well, I don't think you're going to see one anytime soon. But, you know, you cannot even find – education's not a bad thing. And there are a number of people now in the Minuteman Project on the border who have never seen it before. Mm-hmm. And this is giving them a chance to see what it looks like at ground zero. And that's not necessarily a bad thing as long as the action stays peaceful.
And it's a complicated picture out there. Ted, we're very grateful to you for bringing us the reporting straight from the border. Thanks for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
Ted Robbins, Southwest correspondent for National Public Radio. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. public got its first chance today to pay respects to Pope John Paul II 2 days after his death. Tens of thousands of mourners filed past the pontiff's robed remains, some crying as they crossed themselves, some taking photos. The body of the Pope will lie in state until his funeral on Friday. Earlier in the day, the pontiff's body was led in a solemn procession from his Vatican residence to St. Peter's. Tonight we bring you some of the sounds of that procession, along with reaction from around the world. We'll hear from British Prime Minister Tony Blair, South African Bishop Desmond Tutu, India's Prime Minister Manmohan Singh, President Bush, and an unidentified mourner from the Pope's home country of Poland.
Advocata nostra, illos tuos misericordes oculos.
Even if you're not a Catholic, even if you're not a Christian, in fact, even if you have no religious faith at all, what people could see in Pope John Paul was a man of true and profound spiritual faith.
Eternam dona
He was a stalwart in the fight against communism, and we in South Africa in the dark days of apartheid's awfulness had a champion and supporter in him.
John Paul II was a people's pope who led the Catholic Church through a period of truly historic changes. He was an iconic figure for three decades.
We will always remember the humble, wise, and fearless priest who became one of history's great moral leaders. We're grateful to God for sending such a man, a son of Poland, who became the Bishop of Rome and a hero for the ages.
Santa Maria Mater Ecclesiae.
He was second to that for me, and he was like the best man on the world.
Britain's Prime Minister Tony Blair, South African Bishop Desmond Tutu, India's Prime Minister Manmohan Singh, President Bush, and an unidentified mourner from the Pope's home country of Poland, along with sounds from today's ceremony in Rome. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Dominus vobiscum.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.